If you love hurricanes, daiquiris, and, well, any rum cocktail, listen up. Captain Morgan's about to shake things up like never before. We're talking Bourbon Street, New Orleans, home to legendary drinks and unforgettable moments. But what if we told you the most iconic cocktails here have one thing in common? Hint? It's not bourbon. That's right, it's rum. And Captain Morgan is bringing unforgettable fun to Bourbon Street in a way you won't want to miss. Get ready for something big as we gear up for Super Bowl 59. Make sure to keep your eyes on NOLA's most iconic street. Who knows, Bourbon Street might just need a new name. Stay tuned for clues and get ready for the most legendary adventure yet. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan Original Spice Rum, 35% alcohol by volume. Captain Morgan Rum Company, New York, New York.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure. 2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. Another one of these Baseball America Prospect Deep Dives. Today, we are talking about the Texas Rangers, your 2023 World Series champions. A little bit of a step back last year, but at the same time, also a step forward from the standpoint of they also graduated Wyatt Langford, they graduated Evan Carter, they saw Kumar Rocker get to the big leagues. And it's still, especially at the top of the list, a pretty interesting and pretty talented farm system. Josh, glad to see you. When you were lining this up, the thing that jumps out here is when you have a player, a pitcher, highly regarded pitcher who's already pitched in the majors, and then you've got the phenom who's coming up behind him in Sebastian Walcott. Kumar Rocker, Sebastian Walcott. How fun and how difficult was a debate of kind of how to line those guys up?
It was something, you know. I really got that. They're the same grade. I think we have them very close in the top 100, if not back-to-back. So I wouldn't consider them one and two, really, as I would consider them
one A, one B,
whichever you want to call it. I went with the guy who's a little more certain, if you can call Kumar that, just because he's already been there. Obviously, there's some variables with Kumar at play. He's had a long injury history. Getting him to a full starter's workload is going to be a task based on the lack of innings that he's pitched in the last few years. But the ceiling is, you know, mid-rotation starter, which is a pretty darn good thing. I think when he got drafted, we were all pretty surprised that he got drafted where he did. And then they pulled the interesting pairing with him and Brock Porter in that draft. They paid them both a lot of money. And right now, Rocker's in the lead for the biggest return on investment at this point. With Walcott, I mean, it's hard to believe that last year was only his first full season as a pro. Like, it seems like it's been longer than that. I don't know why, but it does. You know, I remember seeing him in spring training of 2023 when I went out there mostly to see Ethan Salas. And then the last day, I went to the Rangers camp because I usually avoid them and the White Sox, not for any bias reasons, but they come here. So I go down there, I want to see the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks because I don't get them in North Carolina. But I remember seeing Walcott, and he took a swing that I turned to one of my favorite Rangers officials and mouthed the words, "Holy," and you can finish that sentence. And that's one of those you know immediately that this guy is special. And I remember, I think if you guys go back about a year on a podcast, I said something, or 2 years now, said something to the effect of, this guy does not need to be in the Dominican Summer League. He could be here right now. And he spent a little bit of time in the Dominican Summer League. But then he came back. They're never shy about moving guys out of the DSL in their first year. He came up and hit like 6 home runs in his first 2 weeks or something and looked like a house of fire. And then he made it to high A by the end of his first year as a pro. And last year he made it to double A. And he's one of those guys that's going to take a little bit of while. Like last year in our first top 100 update, we talked about him because he was spinning his wheels a little bit at high A, which is understandable because he was the age of a high school freshman or a high school senior, not a high school freshman, high school senior. And he was struggling with the South Atlantic League, understandably so. But every time you talk to a scout, it was like, yeah, I have a 6 on him. Yeah, I have a 6 on him. Yeah, I have a 7 on him. And it's like, okay, that's what scouts do. If scouting the stat line were all this would be, all this was, we could all scout. But it takes a little bit of projection, a little bit of waiting, a little bit of seeing the tools. And lo and behold, the crowd was right so far. And now he's going to get his full extended test of double A, got a little bit of a cameo there last year. But now he enters a Ranger system where the Texas League is a pretty hitter-friendly environment. And then he's going to go to the Pacific Coast League, which is a pretty hitter-friendly environment. And there's an outside chance he gets to the big leagues at the end of this year, which is a pretty good thing for a guy who signed 2 years ago.
And a guy who is turning 19 during spring training.
Right. And, you know, we did this exercise where predict your number one prospect by the end of this time next year. And it was almost... The final result said something different, but I think some of us had to change our ballots.
It was near unanimous that Sebastian Walcott was our pick.
Right. And I think there was like one other person, like I think one of us changed their vote so we wouldn't be near unanimous.
Multiple. I didn't write up Walcott, like not because I didn't believe Walcott could be it, but because it's not a particularly useful exercise for our readers if we just have everyone writing, here's why Sebastian Walcott could be number one.
So this year, like last year, they entered this season with 2 of the very best prospects in the sport, and they both graduated, Carter and Langford. This year, they enter the year with 2 of the very best prospects in the sport. Well, both of them graduate, that'd be very surprising, but one of them probably should. I would imagine Rocker is not a prospect at this time next year, but they will.
If he is, something's gone wrong.
Yes, but they'll lead with it. I mean, it'll be the easiest thing in the world to write up number one for them next year. It's a very, very exciting ball player, and he could be a true five-tooler. You know, the caveat with most true five-toolers is he going to hit? But he can hit for power, he can run, he can throw. There's a question of whether he stays at shortstop, but you know, that doesn't – he can his bat will profile anywhere, and they've got the infield kind of locked up for a while. So either way, it's going to be has a chance to be a special player.
I want to come back to Rocker for a minute. How, like what we saw from Rocker last year, the best way I could put it is I feel like we got to see the Kumar Rocker that we've been waiting to see largely because of injuries, but we saw Vanderbilt Kumar Rocker again in many ways. Freshman year Vanderbilt Kumar Rocker.
So Kumar's path has been a little interesting too. Obviously, I think everybody knows the back. I could have done an entire 550 words on just the background for this, the capsule. But when you get to into pro ball, before he had his surgery, you were hearing stuff out of Hickory where, okay, he's back. He's back, he's back, he's back. And part of you are saying, okay, it's Hickory. And Vanderbilt guy should shove at Hickory. And then his elbow popped, and that was that. But he came back, and it was immediately, oh, nothing changed. He's just older. Vanderbilt Kumar is back and he's shoving. And then he came back, I think right around the time we were doing some update for our 100 list. And the feedback we got was like, yeah, this might be the best pitching prospect in the sport right now. And so we moved him up accordingly and he shoved and he shoved and he shoved some more. And then he got to the big leagues and took his lumps a little bit. But, you know, this is a high end pitching prospect. And he's going to have a chance this year to get as much of a workload as possible. You're going to have to be careful with it. Like I said, it's not like you take a massive jump to get him to a full season starter's workload. But I'm sure they have the arms to be creative.
So with Kumar Rocker, we saw the fastball, we saw the slider in the big leagues. We saw him in the minors also. how far along is the changeup? How important is the changeup or the cutter going to be to Kumar Rocker being a successful big league starter?
Well, you're going to need one or both to get to average. And the good news is scouts project one or both to get to average. They've got above average on the changeup and future average on the cutter. So obviously there's going to be time needed to develop them to get them to that ceiling. But he has the potential there for average or better pitches. Obviously the fastball and slider are much better than that. But he's not going to be a two-pitch guy in the big leagues. So we'll see how it looks this year. But there were good signs at the end of last year.
Because I do think it's, there are days where he could probably just succeed with fastball slider, but not most days. He's going to need that third pitch that makes, to me, is it that makes the fastball and the slider more effective because, again, on an average day, he's not Spencer Strider is the way I would put it. He's not the guy.
That's the good example. Well, first of all, I don't know how many people thought Spencer Strider was going to be Spencer Strider, but here he is. But you're right. That was the example I was going to go to of a two-pitch guy who can, if your two pitches are 80s, then you can probably do it. The other example we were talking about last night was Sandy Koufax, who was, famously had two pitches and telegraphed them both. It didn't really matter. I don't think he's going to be Sandy Koufax either for a lot of reasons. But either way, I think that there's a good sign there of him to be a good mid-rotation big league starter. And by mid-rotation, I mean three, because sometimes you talk about a four. But three, to me, is the middle of five. I'm not a math genius, but I'm going to call him a three starter.
So to jump back to Walcott again, as we kind of look at this 1A and 1B, as you said, there's questions about whether he can stay at shortstop. Now, also, there are questions about whether he, if he's ready in a year, like whether the Rangers, how he fits with that. Because as you said, there's Corey Seager, there's Josh Jung, there's Marcus Semien. It's a team that has a lot of infielders. But looking at it, when you talk to scouts, where does he project best? Is shortstop a realistic, best case scenario, or is it more third base or in the outfield, or where kind of does he most likely fit when we're talking about Sebastian Walcott far in the future, like when he's 23,
Well, right. And you have to remember he's going to turn 19 this year. He's not done growing. His man's body isn't there yet. So that's kind of an unknowable. Depends on how he thickens up, but he's got the arm certainly for right field. Third base could be there too, but you talked about the middle of that infield. Like Marcus Semien is the Iron Man; he never takes days off. I remember correctly, but his arm would fit at third base. I think what it boils down to is this is a guy you make room for, or could be a guy you make room for. You find a spot. His bat has a chance to be that good. And he's not one of those guys who doesn't have a home because he's a loaf, but he's pretty athletic and he just might get too big for shortstop. Not that that's a thing anymore. We got O'Neill Cruz playing shortstop. We got Ellie Dillard.
He's now moved, but yes, we did have him playing there.
They're long stops, but yeah. Go ahead.
I mean, I will note with that Semien is signed through 28. Seager is signed through 31. So
correct. Josh Jung has had trouble staying on the field. So, I mean, that could be a guy who could spell him there. Not that they don't have other guys up in the upper realms of that system who could do the same thing. But this guy's got superstar potential.
Right. He, as you said, he is a guy who, when he arrives, you figure out a spot for him because you're not good enough to not be able to find a way, place for this guy to fit. That's just, there's not a team out there who the all-star teams, maybe that would be about the limit of I'm sorry, but we don't have room for you just yet. Which by the way, if you're enjoying all of our deep dives, I will just point out, head over to baseballamerica.com. We have so much great content right now and our subscribers are eating it all up. We have fantasy coverage, dynasty rankings, rankings, all the rankings you need for fantasy baseball. If you've got drafts coming up, sim leagues, if you play APA, play Strat, I could list OOTP, whatever leagues those are. We've got news for you. We've got info for you. But then also, if you just care about your team or you care about baseball in general, we have, as you watch this, we now have 40 prospects for all 30 organizations with write-ups. We have tools grades for the top 30. We also have updated our draft rankings to the top 200. so much at baseballamerica.com. Come join us. I promise you, if you like this, you will enjoy that as well. But Josh, as we kind of look at the rest of this top 10, the thing that really stands out to me is there are some other arms here, especially who you kind of, I would describe as knocking on the door, where I wouldn't be stunned to see some other names on this top 10 make it to Texas, make it to the big leagues by the end of the season. Is that realistic or unrealistic?
That's very realistic. Alejandro Rosario is a great scouting story. Like, if you go look at his numbers at Miami, they don't scream guy who was in the top 10 or guy who was in the top 50, the top 100. But credit to the people who watched him, the amateur guys, the directors, the cross-checkers, all those guys, they saw what he was and they imagined what he could be if they made a few changes. And they told him, hey, you start throwing fastball up and splitter down. And lo and behold, that worked. I believe Miami had been asked to ask him to shelve his splitter, which was his best pitch and remains his best pitch. And stunningly, when you give a guy back his best pitch, good things happen. And he's got a decent breaking ball, too. It rides the line between slider and curveball. Depends what it is. Depends on who you're talking to, really. But it's good enough to give him a third weapon. And he was one of the best pitchers in the minor leagues last year. Part of you wants to say, okay, he was, again, a Miami pedigree. He probably should dominate the low levels of the minor leagues. And he did.
Let me interject on that. But it does make sense, though, when you have a guy who hadn't had success, right? Like, it's one thing if you had sent – if Kumar Rocker or Jack Leiter, coming off of dominating at Vanderbilt, had spent a whole season in A-ball, it would have been like, what's going on here? But in the case of Rosario, he kind of needed to build some confidence back, didn't he?
Yes and no. I mean, I think the lower levels of the minor leagues are as such where if you can throw a good changeup, or in this case a splitter, you're going to dominate, because most of these guys do not see it. I've seen really good teams of prospects get carved up by someone who can make a ball fade at 10 miles an hour slower than their fastball. And that's what he could do. So, I mean, I saw him at Down East, and Lord have mercy on those kids. That wasn't fair. And then it wasn't a fair fight in Hickory either. And, you know, we'll see what it looks like again. The upper levels of the Rangers minor leagues in particular are hitters go to get better there.
They're challenging for a pitcher.
Yes. So this will be a big year for him, but if he succeeds, he could be in the big leagues this year. Winston Santos is another guy we're going to talk about. I mean, he's long been one of really interesting arms in their system. Like, he had a really good fastball, pretty good changeup, but his slider, and I believe in the words of their player development staff, wasn't sliding. And that is a big part of a slider. No matter whether it's a gyro slider or a bullet slider or a sweeper, it needs to move. And it hadn't been moving until this year. Once it started doing that, well, he started dominating, and he wound up in the futures game. And it's a good start. He wound up in the upper minors as well, and he could wind up in Texas by the end of the season. Maybe he's a back-end starter someday.
And in between, we've got Emiliano Teodo, who is going to fit somewhere, I would say, by the end of the year if he's healthy, whether it's as a starter or – if you get to the end of the year and all the starters are healthy and everything's good and you've got a full rotation, which most teams don't get to the end of the year that way, but if you did, it's hard for me to imagine him not being a useful guy to add to your bullpen, especially if you're making a run at the postseason.
Correct. Like, this is a guy who throws in the hundreds regularly. But this is another story of development. I'll take it back to last year at some point, 2 years ago. I saw him at Winston-Salem, and this is a guy who throws 98 to 101. The number of fastballs swung and missed at by Winston-Salem that day, not a murderer's row that year, was zero. Zero, which is, I remember looking at my paper afterward and going, I have no circles around fastballs. This is kind of silly. That day, after that point, they said, okay, you are going to throw a two-seamer now. Because your four-seam fastball gets hit. He doesn't get missed. He didn't get hit that day. He just didn't get missed at all. Mm-hmm. And I remember, too, because I didn't see him after that, but I went to the Fall League, and the desert god Bill Mitchell was talking to me all week about, I want to see Teodo. I want to see Teodo. I said, Bill, like, you're going to be disappointed. He throws really hard. And on the last day of fall league, he came out, and the way I tell it is the Rangers were in the World Series that year against the Diamondbacks. They were playing 20 minutes away in Salt River. And I was like, why is he here? Like, he should be on the mound in the Fall Classic right now. This is that good. And I think he struck out two guys and got three outs on eight pitches. And I said to Bill, like, I was wrong. Something's different. And someone with them texted me, like, what'd you think of his new two-seamer? Like, yeah, it's better than the four-seamer. And it was not a fair fight against whichever team he was facing, Salt River, that day. But that's, again, that's a case of a player development group being creative and saying, okay, we have this. It's not working. What can we do? Instead of trying to force feed something that's not working. And now you've got a guy not only who's having far more success, but you have a guy who may be able to start. It's not out of the question. His best role might still be the bullpen. But 2 years ago, it was like, no, you're not, no chance. You're not starting. He got to the Futures game. I believe he was the starter. And I believe he got through. He's the only pitcher, I forget the stat, to throw two shutout innings in the Futures game, like ever, which is kind of bananas, but kind of lends itself to the format. But I think he got through his first inning in like four pitches or something. And so they brought him in for a second inning, and he put another zero on the board. So this is a guy who's taken massive step, not a high dollar signee, just a guy who had a big arm and something you could dream on. And now he's still got that big arm, and he's got a good breaking ball. And he's getting a lot of outs, which, I mean, to this layman, that's a good formula.
It's not all rosy. You know, there are, you mentioned Brock Porter before. Brock Porter is, I would say at this point, a mystery wrapped in an enigma in some ways, to use an old cliche of, you know, a real, like, this was the other guy that the Rangers went after in the Kumar Rocker draft. Kind of just delivery seems to have fallen apart. It is basically, I would say, the best way you can put it is be paying attention, fans, to see, like, if he reappears somewhere in 25, because it's kind of, I mean, 24 was completely a lost season, basically. Is that a fair way to put it?
I think it is, too. We started hearing in spring training last year that something was off. His fastball was down. And I think, you know, based on the way I hear it, it got as close to the yips without being the yips as you can get. It sounded like when the lights weren't on or there was nobody, there weren't the 12 people in the stands watching the ACL, he could do it. But if you put any sort of pressure on him, bad things happened and the outings were real short. So this is a huge swing year for him.
And the other one I want to bring up, who is still in the top 10, but at the back of the top 10, is Jack Leiter, who also has reached the majors. But I would say in 25, he's basically now kind of battling to see, are you going to stay a starter? Or were you going to see what you can do as a reliever? Because the consistency of the command and the consistency of the quality, especially like we talked about with Rocker, that he's a fastball slider pitcher. How are the secondaries going to come along? True of Leiter too, but at the same time with Leiter, I feel like the way we would put it is, but if you take a grade or more off of the fastball and the slider compared to Rocker, the importance of developing a consistent third pitch becomes much more important, because Rocker's fastball and slider, if they're not located precisely, can really get hit.
Right. You've actually written a really good story about the metamorphosis in Leiter's delivery. And, you know, scouts last year, even when he was having really good success, they weren't buying it. It was kind of like, okay, he's got stuff that bad hitters are going to chase at, but he's not going to face bad hitters in the big leagues. He's going to face good hitters who know that if you can't throw your secondaries for strikes, they can just wait and get a fastball. And when they get said fastball, they can hammer it. And he learned the hard way in the big league that you are going to need to be able to keep hitters honest with off-speed pitches that you can throw for strikes. And if you can't do that, I don't know what his future is. Swingman, maybe?
So, that again, this is a lot of pitching. There's a lot of pitching here. But we also are going to talk about some other position players right after this quick break. So, Josh, I don't want to ignore the position players here. The Rangers have kind of gone to the draft. Like, I think we should start by saying there's less position players right now as prospects other than Walcott at the top of the system than there are pitchers. But that's also probably not a bad thing when, as we should note, when we talk about the quality of the Rangers farm system right now, Evan Carter and Wyatt Langford in other systems might still be eligible. Both of them basically have full seasons in the majors under their belt, but that's because they both move extremely quickly. I would say that we're the Rangers and we are both, I would say, expecting that we'll see further steps forward from both of them in 2025. Now that they've had a full season under their belt, they're a little bit more mature, all that.
Well, I mean, but, I don't know if Carter's had a full season under his belt. He's had,
yeah, he got hurt.
He needs to stay healthy. Like, he's had a full year of service time, but he's not had a full season of experience.
But on top of that, even if you look at the, because of some of the free agent signings and all they've made, because of the moves they've made, this is a team that also has kind of depth of former prospects. Ezekiel Duran, Josh Smith, Leody Taveras are kind of all, I would say, in that backup role, you know, especially I would say Duran, especially is kind of like the, he can play a little bit of everywhere for them, Smith to some extent as well. But if you look in the farm system here, are there other really intriguing position player pieces coming up, or is it a little bit more of like role player types that this is kind of the position player depth?
Well, obviously you have their first rounder from last year, Malcolm Moore, the catcher from Stanford, who is a big boy, who swings the bat very hard, hits the ball very far. Wasn't a great pro debut for him, but when he connects, he can mash. It's I've got to see him with the college national team. He can hit the ball a long freaking way. Whether he can catch is another story. Sounds like they've done some work with him on their transfers and receiving and all that good stuff, so it's taken some steps forward. But, you know, that's one of their most intriguing non-Walcott position player. And then the guy to really watch is Yolfran Castillo. That's a guy who came up last year. He was signed last year. And I mentioned earlier that they are not afraid to move guys out of the DSL if their performance warrants it. And his performance most certainly did warrant it. He does not miss, period. He doesn't hit for a whole lot of contact or a whole lot of power. I think he has 5 extra base hits total in his one season, and none of them were triples or homers, but he's got a frame he can build on. And if you can add some strength to that frame and maintain those levels of contact, well, maybe not those levels of contact, that would make him some superhuman, but you know, even 70% of those levels of contact, you've got a potential, I'll still say it, you've got a potential superstar. Like, this could be if this guy's in the top 50 of our top 100 next year, it would not surprise me. There were some really lofty comps put on him, and I'm not going to repeat them here. I'll just tease you. But he could be special. I'll just leave it at that. I think 7 for a guy out of the DSL is pretty good. I think I put him at 7.
And he's not one that you got to see when you were down there, was he?
No, he was gone by then. You know, everyone was gone by then. I did see, well, if you're going to make me segue real nicely, I will. I did go to the DSL All-Star game and I saw Paulino Santana, who, that's a pretty swing. Now, does he have the same high ceiling as the other guys? No. It depends on where he lands. It sounds like it's kind of a split camp between center field and right or corner, but he showed out really well that day. I loved the swing. He won DSL offensive MVP or top star, whatever, of that game. That was pretty cool. I think he had 2 hits or something. But, you know, that was a high-dollar signee who definitely has some potential. And they, third time now, they're not afraid to move guys aggressively. That entire Down East team 2 years ago could have been high school seniors. Like, those guys, they knew it would be slow burns, and the burns continued to be slow. Like, a guy to watch is Anthony Gutierrez, who had a lot of hype 2 years ago, and it just hasn't really worked out. He's been playing or had been playing through a shoulder injury, and he finally got it repaired late last year. So how he looks coming out of that will be pretty key, because there's talent there. It's just been muted by, you know, frayed muscles in the shoulder. And if he comes back, he makes some changes to the swing, you could have a guy who rebounds big time and starts to approach his potential. So there's some buy low options in there as well.
I was going to ask you to name some non-top 10 prospects to keep an eye on, but you've already done it. The other thing then that I'll just ask before we wrap this up is, as you look at the Rangers here, like, so what is it that they need to do better on the farm system? We talked about the pitching they had, and they've had some pitching development success stories. They have a potential superstar in Sebastian Walcott, who will be in Double A this year. They have another very intriguing high ceiling prospect who will be kind of making his full, you know, stateside debut, having already reached here, but like, you know, a season where he spends the entire year in the States, as you mentioned. But going beyond that, like, where are kind of like, okay, this is where they could, can they need to take some strides forward?
It's hard to pin down one area in particular, but it's hard to say. It's tough to say it when you've just graduated guys like Langford and Carter, but upper level hitting development might be kind of on the menu. I just looked at my top 30 again. Not a whole lot of hitters on there. And the guys who are in the upper levels, your Justin Foscues, your Dustin Harris's, they haven't quite panned out. Like, their ceilings are much lower than they were a couple years ago, which happens to, you know, most players who go from low A to the upper levels. The dreams become more reality. But
the funnel narrows as you go up.
It does.
Yeah. You get more certainty, but less potential.
And, you know, right now, those are guys, we mentioned that their roster is pretty set. Like, those are guys without homes right now. Justin Foscue has mastered AAA. Now he needs to prove it in the big leagues. Whether he gets that chance with Texas, I don't know. But I think they've shown their hand a little bit by getting Jake Berger over there at first base, I think. Mm-hmm. That kind of blocks his only option. Dustin Harris, he looked like a house of fire 2 years ago. And right now you're a second division regular or backup.
But especially in Foscue's case, it's kind of hard to see him sticking as a multi-position guy either, because
his defense is not good.
It's more bat than glove.
That's putting it mildly. Yes.
So first, you know, if you're a first base only, you're not probably going to ride the bench as your backup first baseman / a little bit of DH and all on a team that has multiple guys who will also probably get some DH time. And he's definitely not going to be like, they're not going to be something like, okay, Marcus Semien is taking his 1 or 2 days off that he does this year at second base. Okay, are we going to put Foscue out there? Are we going to put Josh Smith? Or are we going to put Ezekiel Duran? It's going to be one of those guys.
Right. And I mean, Josh Smith, we mentioned him earlier, like, we kind of glossed over him, but that was a 3.2 war player last year. Like, that was a pretty good little ball player. 13 bombs, 11 stolen bases, 110 off plus. He can
play a lot of positions.
Mm-hmm. So that's not a guy I would really gloss over as just a secondary piece, but he's a nice little, 15 years ago, we just said, this is a Ben Zobrist, but here he is.
And that's where I would say, I know that they only won 78 games last year, and obviously the pitching is going to be a key part of it again this year. But the thing that does stand out to me about this team for 2025 is, I feel like more than most years for them, assuming that, again, that there's reasonable help. But this is a team that probably is not going to be derailed by one or two injuries. There's a little bit more resilience, a little bit more depth here. You talk about a guy like Smith who could fill in kind of at multiple positions if needed. You talk about a guy like Duran, who he didn't have a great year last year, but he had a better year 2 years ago. Like, where it's like, okay, it's not crazy to think that he could help in a 250, 300 plate appearance role. You talk about, you know, again, getting better years, getting a healthy year from Carter, getting a better year from Langford. There are ways here that this team's lineup could be really good. And then now the question becomes, okay, pitching wise, it was much better than expected 2 years ago, especially down the stretch. Jordan Montgomery really steps up, situations like that. Last year, a lot of that fell apart. You didn't get that performance from Dane Dunning. You didn't get, you know, Jordan Montgomery's gone. You didn't get it from multiple guys. And, you know, okay, there are still a little bit of questions, I would say, but there is also, as you noted, there's Rocker, there's Santos, there's Teodo, there's potentially Leiter. There was a number of guys who could fit into that in addition to kind of what they did at the major league level. And an AL West that doesn't look as imposing as it did a few years ago, be interested to see if that's enough.
It will be. Like, I don't think I'm ready to roll with your Santoses and your Rosarios and your Teodos out the chute, which means you're going to need something from the veterans you have on your roster who just cannot stay healthy. If they can't do it again in this first half of the season or first two thirds of the season, you're in trouble. There's really no way to put it. No other way to put it. They need something from their starting pitching and their bullpen, quite frankly.
But they also do need depth, as you're saying, because like if you with Jacob DeGrom, you're kind of any time out there, you're watching a little bit through your eyes and trying to, you know, through your hands to like, hey, let's stay healthy. Tyler Molly, you know, coming off of injury, there are multiple guys who have had durability issues. Nathan Eovaldi's been a picture of health recently, but he's also got a lot of wear and tear on that arm. There's a lot of questions there.
Jonathan Gray,
you know,
same thing,
right?
That's really the long and short of it is they'll go as far as their pitching can take them. And if it takes them to the injured list, well, they won't go very far.
But the other thing I'll say about that is when you talk about the system, there is probably also enough here that if they wanted to do as they did 2 years ago, at the deadline, we're going to make moves. Okay. And they made some moves last year too, I should note. Like, it's not like they didn't make any moves last year to try to bulk it up. But if they do that like they did two years ago, there are guys here who might be very much useful trade chips to bring talent back.
There are certainly a couple of teams in the big leagues right now I can think of that have young, controllable starters that would benefit from young, controllable hitters. One of them's in the division, so I don't think that's going to happen. But the other, you know, I'm not going to try to make trades for people, but they've got assets to deal. And if they wanted to swing something in the next 6 weeks or whenever before the season starts, that might be. You might want to do that. I mean, the fact that they won the World Series 2 years ago maybe lessens the urgency just a little bit. But
I would say it should. You won the World Series 2 years ago. And by the way, if this is – we're talking about Dallas right now, right? So I don't think any Mavericks fans right now are feeling really good about their team. And the Cowboys just announced their head coach on a Friday night in kind of a news dump kind of situation. I don't think a whole lot of Cowboys fans are feeling great about their situation either. The Rangers are the team that has actually had success. The Rangers are the team that can point to, we got a ring.
It wouldn't be a Baseball America podcast without referencing Luka Doncic and Brian Schottenheimer. And that's just every one of these 30 teams, right, JJ? I get that. But also on the flip side of that, go tell the Dodgers that like, oh yeah, you want a ring. You want to rest on your laurels?
No, that works. And to the Rangers' credit, again, like this is a system that they didn't just say, okay, we won it, so now we're tearing it all down. They went out and spent, and they spent well because Corey Seager, Marcus Semien, they don't win 2 years ago without those guys. And then on top of that, like I think that really, but if we talk about how this team kind of bounces back to being a playoff team in 25, the pitching obviously is going to be the question. But the other part of it is you kind of can count it. You think you should be able to count on Semien, should be able to count on Seager. But it really comes down to is Wyatt Langford or Evan Carter, not even both, but can one of them be their third best player or their fourth best player, the position player? And if that's the case, if those guys can make steps forward, and we're talking at still very young ages, you know, we're talking about a guy who's going to be a 22-year-old this year in Carter and a guy who's going to be a 23-year-old this year in Langford. If those guys can take significant steps forward, man, that's going to really do something for this lineup that, again, does have a couple of guys in it who are stars. I mean, Corey Seager has been a star. Marcus Semien has been a star. And then now you're looking for support.
Jake Berger has been star-ish.
I won't go star for him. Jake Berger has been a good first baseman.
You know what he is, though? And I'll go on a Jake Berger tangent here. You can look up his baseball reference page all you want, but I did the White Sox system a bunch of years ago. And when they talked about him right after the draft, one of their guys said, this guy has the potential to be a captain of a team. And by that, he meant the makeup. And that's really important. And I think then the fact that he then overcame both those injuries in such a short span to not only get back to the big leagues, but to thrive in the big leagues. I think that speaks a lot to, you know, what you might
see in
a baseball card. That's the kind of guy you want on your club who can rally the troops during a downstretch, who can keep things light. I think that's an underrated part of his game. It's just not going to factor into war. I think that was a really good move.
I think it's a really good move too. I see that, all that. I'm just saying with him, like, but also like when you're talking about leaders of this team, I know they're a little bit quiet, but it's going to be Marcus Semien. It's going to be Corey Seager, because you have guys on this team who have been there quite a while now, who've won it there, and are your undisputed stars. You know,
for sure.
Those are the guys.
For sure. It can't help to have more guys like that. It can't help to have cannot hurt to have more high character guys on your club. I just thought that was a really good move that way. But yeah, that's kind of the way it has to be. I think Langford also, like we talked about Langford, he did turn a corner. I think he did toward the end of last year. Like I seem to remember him taking a really long time to hit an outside the park home run. And then when he finally did, he kind of got going there toward the second half. You kind of sort of started to see what he could be.
I don't want to make it sound like he had a good year. He really did. Like, it's not a bad year by any stretch of the imagination. I just think he has better years in his future.
Oh, I would assume so too. It's, you know, again,
I mean, again, like that's, I mean, he had a, there is nothing about his season last year that you go, oh, that was utterly disappointing. Like, he was a rookie of the year candidate. I don't want to make it sound like Evan Carter is the one who, because of injury, you could really see a significantly better Evan Carter, you hope. Wyatt Langford, you're just hoping that he goes from being above average player now to being a guy who really does have star potential if it all clicks. So we'll see.
The thing about Evan Carter, and I'm making this podcast go longer than you want, is, you know, obviously he needed to come in the last year working on himself against left-handers. And he didn't get the chance. But if you remember 2 years ago, so long ago, that dude was, as the kids like to say, a demon in the playoffs. Like, he showed the upper echelon of his potential on the biggest stage already. He's got a ring to show for it. So there's some there. He just needs to be there more often to kind of confuse everyone. But,
and he needs to be healthy.
I mean, like, yes, that's what I'm
just
getting.
Kind of battle through.
Yeah. You need to be on the field. That's the sixth tool that we mercifully don't
create. But no, I'm not just saying on the field. He has to be healthy on the field, because what I'm saying by that is he has injuries that you can try to gut your way through, and you go, why is he hitting a .190? He's better than that. And it's like, because he's not really healthy. Like, that's the challenge of,
yeah, his injuries have been interesting throughout the course of his career. But yeah.
But I'm saying, like, back injuries are something that you always, I always worry about a back injury much more so than I do, like, oh, his elbow is barking at him or something like that.
For sure.
They're all important, but backs are kind of pretty foundational. But there's a lot interesting about the Rangers. And, you know, we're again, they'll have a lot more over at baseballamerica.com, and check it out. Join us. Again, we're going to keep these deep dives rolling. One a day, one a weekday. We're trying to do this to get these all done before spring training wraps up, and really before spring training even gets fully to full speed. We're not going to do, ideally, we're going to have these all done before the first backfield games are being played. We'll see if we pull that off, but that's the goal. For Josh, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
If you love hurricanes, daiquiris, and, well, any rum cocktail, listen up. Captain Morgan's about to shake things up like never before. We're talking Bourbon Street, New Orleans, home to legendary drinks and unforgettable moments. But what if we told you the most iconic cocktails here have one thing in common? Hint? It's not bourbon. That's right, it's rum. And Captain Morgan is bringing unforgettable fun to Bourbon Street in a way you won't want to miss. get ready for something big as we gear up for Super Bowl 59. Make sure to keep your eyes on NOLA's most iconic street. Who knows? Bourbon Street might just need a new name. Stay tuned for clues and get ready for the most legendary adventure yet. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan Original Spice Rum, 35% alcohol by volume. Captain Morgan Rum Company, New York, New York.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.